Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just a normal London swimming pool. But join us later as a crocodile is released live on Parkgate. It's an introduction to Parkgate. It's an introduction to Parkgate. It's an introduction to Parkgate that I'm singing, but not for long. Oh, you just caught me recording an introduction to Parkgate. Just stick it up there, it'll be fine. Okay, on today's episode, we have someone very, very interesting. It is somebody who, can you guess? I'm going to read this out from his LinkedIn. He's going to be furious about this. He's an enthusiastic, creative, and friendly biology graduate with 5 years of varied experience in customer service, radio production, and the leisure industry. Who could it be? Yes, it's Philip Kosteletsky. Philip talked to me at Abney Park Cemetery, Stoke Newington. We looked at some graves. We petted some dogs and we talked about some of the comedy greats from years gone by. Thank you for your time, Philip. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this chat. And if you like Parkgate, please leave us a review. You can say you hate it. I don't care. But just leave us a review. And follow us on social at Parkgate Podcast. My new comedy feed is at Christopher Beanland Comedy on Instagram. Parkgate.co.uk is the website. Enjoy this episode. Okay, welcome to Abney Park Cemetery in Stoke Newington. It's a park full of graves. And I'm here with Philip Kosteletsky.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Philip.
I'm good. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good. Wie geht's dir?
Wie geht's dir? Alles gut und dir?
Gut, danke.
Wonderful. I appreciate the effort of putting in a couple of German words in there.
My German is so bad. Risible.
Yeah.
It's a hard language to learn, though.
It is a very hard language. I was lucky that I was raised bilingual, so I didn't have to fully learn it. But then I kind of lost it, and so I had to learn it again. Yeah. So I do sort of know the challenges. Thank you for taking me out on this date. You say park cemetery. I think it's more cemetery park, I'll be honest. It's so romantic.
Yeah.
I'll make wines.
Are you feeling a bit skeptical about the whole thing?
No.
Even I'm starting to question myself. But I sort of have the plan in my mind, but you must be like, well, why are we walking through this graveyard?
I don't mind it, actually. I think there's something that's kind of romantic about it. Is it meant to be like an actual date, or is it just like called a park date podcast for a bit of fun?
Oh, yeah, it's an actual date, yeah. Things have to happen
after.
I basically talked to you for 30 minutes, and then
we'll
see what happens. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Then I get the Patreon exclusive. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, it depends.
Sorry, I got to tell my shoelace.
Depends what level you sign up to.
Yeah.
Also, now I'm thinking, is it suitable for us to be talking in a graveyard? I think it's okay, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think there's any, like... Is that a thing? Is that a superstition here in the UK?
I think it's okay. I think it's okay. I'm just like, double thinking. Actually, I did one with Mark Thomas in a kind of similar place, but there was more space.
Yeah.
It was less spooky and less threatening.
It is. This looks very much like a scene in Harry Potter where one of the auxiliary characters dies.
It does look like that, exactly. Are you a Harry Potter fan?
No, I think, I don't know why it was in my head. I think I've been playing the game recently.
Yeah.
The boycotted game or whatever. I don't know if you're not meant to play it, but I've been playing it a little bit. A few months ago, I was playing a few months ago, and then I remembered it today, and so I think that's why it was in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a bit spooky, but I kind of like it.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite interesting, and you can see, actually, one of the things about this graveyard, I feel a bit like a tour guide now, but it's interesting because it's kind of a non-conformist graveyard. So
okay.
I think people who were like radicals and liberals and people like outside the establishment buried here.
Yeah, those people outside the establishment paid like a couple grand to have a huge tombstone.
This one with a lion on it.
This is a huge lion.
Yeah.
I don't think this person was completely outside the establishment.
Exactly. It's quite an ostentatious.
Do you want to look at it properly?
Let's have a look at it. I think this would be... I was thinking maybe they should just plant a tree when I died, but actually now thinking about it, I think I would like
a big
sleeping lion on top of my grave. I think that would be a good...
In ever-loving memory of Frank C. Bostock, born mm-hmm. September 10th, 1866, died October 8th, 1912. On that happy Easter morning, all the graves, their dead restore, father, sister, child and mother, meet once more. I didn't enunciate that with any of the rhythm that it was meant to be.
I think you did a good job
No, I don't think I did, but I appreciate it. It's the family grave.
Yeah, the whole family.
It's only the two of them, probably stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, I think I would probably prefer to not have to spend eternity with my family.
Yeah.
I love them, but maybe they can have their grave. And maybe I'll just have one a little distance away.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Peace.
I, you know, the thing about a family grave is you can put all your other family members in there and you could be like, don't bury me there. But you don't actually get to choose. So someone could just totally
you'd never know.
Screw you over. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You'd never know, would you?
Do you believe in the afterlife?
Oh, wow. That's...
Is this not an appropriate place to ask?
No, we're getting on to the big questions. I don't know about that one. I'm not sure if I do, but I'm kind of... since I was a kid, I was always interested in ghosts.
Mm, is that what we're here?
I loved reading ghost stories. Yeah, here's like the chapel thing. I loved the idea of ghosts, and I do wonder if...
Yeah.
Do you think ghosts exist? I don't know.
I get some spooks every once in a while.
Weird things happen sometimes.
Some stuff does happen. I've never had like a godly experience. I've had a few moments where I've like felt certainly an otherly presence, but I don't think anything godly.
What about you? Are you...
Do I believe in an afterlife?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or religion.
I sort of don't invest a lot of time into thinking about it.
Hmm.
I think if there was evidence, I'd believe it. But if there isn't, I'm just kind of neutral.
Yeah.
We can't really enter this. This is a nice little church area.
Yeah, construction work on the... It's kind of like a church. It looks like a church with like no windows in the middle of the graveyard.
Do you want to try to sneak in, or are you not that inclined?
We could. Should we climb over the fence?
There's more of this stinging nettle here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, we can. It's done a pretty good job.
Here. Yeah.
We'd have to properly climb over it.
Well, we've had a look anyway.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is educational as well as recreational.
Yeah. I'm digging
Odyssey.
It.
Okay, let's go. We need to not get too lost. Otherwise, I have a feeling they close it. Quite soon.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so, they probably close at 6:00 a little.
Yeah, exactly. Earliest. We'll be out by then. We've tackled all the big topic. Any other big questions you want to talk about?
No, nothing really. I mean, you know, just sort of. Do you play the game like look for the oldest tombstone? Do you know that game?
No.
So you go in a graveyard and you try to find the oldest tombstone.
Ah.
The problem is the really old ones obviously are all faded and stuff like this. But you know what this is? This is more like a graveyard. Everything's overgrown.
Mm.
Like it's not maintained. So maybe that's the radical aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell if this was a park first or a cemetery first.
I think it was made as a cemetery.
Oh.
But it's, yeah, become kind of overgrown.
Yeah.
And sort of, yeah, it makes it more gothic, doesn't it? With all the...
So goth.
All of the
this is so goth.
It's exactly.
That's so hardcore, dude. I want to be buried in a place where no one will see my grave.
It's so goth that The Cure could play.
Yeah,
could play here. Have you ever been to Highgate Cemetery, where you can see Karl Marx's
head. Yeah.
On his grave.
I don't remember that one. Is that near a football stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the one where they, my mother was like, she's really into like art history and stuff like that, so we went there once.
Yeah.
And she, like, they were talking about how there was the Chelsea football, like, not Chelsea football, the guy who's, like, created the football team that's at that stadium. I'm not really into football, you can tell that by how I phrased this. He, like, the guy...
He's a very Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Like a ball.
Yeah, like a... You know the head of a football team? He is apparently actually buried in that graveyard, but none of the fans really know it, and so a lot of times they just walk by without thinking about it.
They don't know.
But yeah, there's a few famous people buried there.
Yeah.
But are they total radicals like these guys? I don't think so, bro.
Who knows? So your sport... One of your sports was more than football, Philip, was swimming, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm stood here with a former lifeguard and swim coach.
How do you know this about me?
I did my research. But there's a dog on its own.
I swam growing up. My mother was a swimmer.
Well, one of the reasons this appealed to me, Philip, is I love swimming as well.
Do you?
And I go swimming every day.
Nice.
I love the Lido. In London Fields, don't know if you know it.
No, I don't know it, no.
It's very, very, very nice. But yeah, I think swimming is a great, great thing. Great for your mind and body, right?
Yeah,
are you still a swimmer? Was there so much swimming that you've given up now?
I've been known to swim on occasion. I swam a lot growing up because obviously my mother pushed it, and then I did it at university. And then I tried to keep... When I was a lifeguard, I was lucky that we had, like, a gym membership. Mm. I mean, the job was horrendous, so we got, like, a free gym membership.
Is it a bad job?
Oh, my God. Lifeguarding is one of the worst jobs ever.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, not one of the worst jobs ever. I mean, I'm sure that, like, you know, oil miners and stuff like this will be listening going, oh, I'm so sorry. But it's, like, it's just mind-bogglingly dumb. And not dull, I mean. Because you just sit there and you look at it and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And so when I was working, we did like an hour and a half on shift, 15-minute break, hour and a half back on.
Right.
And it's just so like nothing's, you're not achieving anything. You're not doing anything. You're just taking these like chlorine levels. And the worst part of it was we had a problem once with our air filtration system in that the chlorine fumes weren't filtering out. And so my eyes started like burning.
From
the chlorine fumes. Yeah, like painfully so.
Yeah.
And I went, like, we had this, one of the building managers, Lucas, who was from Lithuania, who was really nice. It's only relevant because of what he says afterwards. I told him, I said, like, you know, dude, my eyes are literally burning here. Is there anything we can do?
Right.
And he just went, you know, Philip, sometimes your eyes are just going to burn. And it just felt like some sort of old Lithuanian proverb,
right.
Like about getting through the tough times. But then he said that stuff like that, and he also went, no, it's okay, we'll work together, we'll get this going. So he actually did help out.
Right.
He was a really interesting guy, because he, like, did this job, but then he also, like, had a wife back home,
yeah.
He was, like, supporting, and he worked in, like, data mining, and he just had all these things going for him. And he was also really, like, he was the first guy I ever met who I think came from a background of criminality, I think. He never fully said it, but he suggested it. But he kind of realized it was wrong. And it was the first person ever I met in my life who said, you know, I grew up with a group of boys, none of us had fathers, and so we turned to that, and I needed to get out of it. And I just thought, how fascinating is that?
Yeah.
Right? That this guy is now here working, and I'm able to chat with him. And it was also interesting for me because I also didn't grow up with a father figure, you know, after year nine of my life, and which is not how a human being would say that sentence. After year nine of my life, I grew up without a father figure. My parents lickety-split when I was nine.
Yeah.
And, well, father, anyway. And so, kind of, it's always been rare when I've met other, like, older men or men who...
Who haven't had that
and then address it so, like, frankly. And
it's
it's, for me, it's like a real, like, oh, okay, very, very interesting.
Yeah. Which relates to your Edinburgh show, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the show is called Daddy's Home.
Daddy's Home.
Yeah.
And I love it. When Philip told me the name of the show, I'd forgotten it. You do it with a wry smile.
Yeah.
And a little wink.
Yeah.
Which is a very good way of announcing it.
It's very it's very stupid. I mean, the title, like, when I thought of it, I thought, this is so stupid. And a lot of my friends were like, oh, you should be worried about calling it that because you might get, like, connotations of, like... people thinking like you're, you know, you're gay or something like that, and I'm like, that's not an issue for me because I'm not, but it, who cares if, you know, mm-hmm. if somebody goes to that show thinking that and they buy that ticket, I'm not going to be fussed
yeah.
for it. But
you'll do what needs to be done.
Yeah, I'll do what needs to be done to sell those tickets.
Just
now.
Like after this podcast.
I'm a hustler.
If it needs to be done.
No, it needs to be done. No, not in the graveyards, please. No, so there was like worries about that and stuff, but
right.
I, every time I say it, like people laugh at it because they yeah. just think it's so stupid, and like it is very tongue-in-cheek. Yeah, I think the show is loosely about that, but if... Ooh, sorry, which yeah. walk
dog poo. There's a very, very strong aroma which is just... absolutely molested my nose. Yeah, that's horrible.
Wow, that's fun. I've never heard of somebody use that in the expression that a smell can molest your nose.
It was so bad, wasn't it? That was very, very bad.
Do you think your nose is going to show up in court and be like, this is where yes. the smell touched me?
Exactly.
Ugh, edit that, please. What was I saying? Yeah, so it's kind of about that a little bit. I don't know. I'm not really...
You need. I think with Edinburgh shows, you need like this jumping off point, don't you? Like,
yeah.
here's an idea, but then actually...
Yeah, so for me, I'm not really, like, I don't really come from a background of, like, loving these Edinburgh Fringe-style shows. I watched a lot of American stand-up growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's... Ooh, doggy's
fine.
Dogs. Oh, that's a very cute dog. Look at that one. Little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of... I prefer the more, what you'd say, or the kind of traditional American-style
stand-up shows.
Who
were your heroes, Philip, when you were younger?
Heroes. Some of them are cancelled, just letting mm-hmm. you know. But they still obviously maintain as my heroes. With that caveat. So Bill Burr, Conan O'Brien, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle,
yeah.
for certain, or, and Sean Locke are certainly like five acts who I just thought were like just phenomenal. Bill
yeah.
Burr recently has really kind of become that kind of hero again in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I just think he's one of the best. It's just so natural and freely. Although I'm rewatching some Dave Chappelle now, which has been good. Richard Pryor, I watched his special recently
yeah.
the first time, and like, have you ever seen any of his stuff?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
It's sensational.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like so good, and it's unbelievable how good it is.
Have you seen I'm Dying Up Here? It's
no.
a show about comedians in LA in the 70s,
yeah.
which no one seems to have seen. It's very, very good.
Let me write that down in my notes.
Yeah, I'm Dying Up Here. It's this group of like wannabe stand-up comedians who form this sort of community. They're all very damaged. It kind of shows how often quite damaged
yeah.
comedians are. Like, there's often a lot going on behind the scenes. But Richard Pryor is one of the people who appear in that show. So there's a lot of, like...
Oh, wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, people from that era who are kind of celebrated.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, Richard Pryor was...
Yeah.
I remember liking him when I was a kid, actually. I was like,
he has just
he's really like...
And it just feels like he's talking. That's
yeah.
the biggest thing. And it's so heartfelt. And like, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, he has this joke about how he says that his dad died while he was having sex. Like his dad died in the middle of having sex with a woman. And he tells a little story. And then he just throws out this incredible one that he goes, he came and went. and it's just like, just fuck, dude. How do you do that? How do you have like all of this like...
Yeah, yeah.
like physicality, personality, and like warmth, and then on top of that just throw in like an absolutely slick one-liner
yeah.
in the mix there. So they're really good. But then like I'm getting into like some of the more contemporary stand-ups, people like Michelle Wolf I think are phenomenal, and there's a lot of like UK based ones that I've gotten into, so people like Mickey Overman, Sean McLaughlin, people like that are really
yeah.
good.
So you were saying that maybe some typical Edinburgh Fringe shows
yeah
don't appeal to you so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what kind of thing are you then trying to craft for this show?
Just, I think the word is a masterpiece.
Definitely, Philip, the most modest guest we've ever had on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I don't know, because I'm kind of in a weird state now writing it, like, you know, putting all the bits of the show together, because I've tried to do like something heartfelt at the end, and it just doesn't feel natural to me.
Yeah.
I'd much rather make a...
Actually, should we sit for a minute?
Yeah, we can sit
yeah.
for a minute. I'd much rather... How do we sit so that the mic catches me?
Just here would be perfect.
Oh, we'll scooch my booch.
Yeah.
Oh, a little doggy. He didn't want to pet
there's
me.
So many, there's so many dogs here.
I think it's... I'm finding really challenging is the pressure to do a serious point in a show. Feels like a lot, whereas I really just want it to be really funny, and I just want people to go away and feel happy and feel good.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I don't challenge the audience in some ways. I certainly say some stuff. I'm in no ways an edgy comedian, because I have no ambition to make the audience feel like shit about themselves.
Yeah.
Although I think a really good edgy comedian, the whole point of it is to actually challenge but make people laugh from being challenged. So in that sense, I try to do some stuff that's a bit more on the line. But a lot of it's just very fun, very silly, and I try to do a little bit of social commentary in there, but I just want it to be a really funny hour of material.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for comedy to be funny.
Yeah.
And I love watching things which are funny, yeah. And it's good that we have a space where people, I'm trying to be diplomatic here, people can express themselves.
While not being funny.
Right. Like, people have points to make, and I get that, and they should be allowed to make those points, absolutely. And a lot of people enjoy that.
Yeah,
But I love jokes. I love laughs, right? I think they're great.
I think that, look at this dog, how the way it walks.
It's very, you said you like corgis. That's kind of like corgi-esque, isn't it?
You know, I don't want to shit on it all, because there are some shows I've seen, like, that are like Rothaniel by Jared Carmichael, I think that's how you pronounce it. His is just, he just does something really interesting. But I think it's more, and I've watched this show recently where I thought it was a really good show, but it felt like it had lost some of the magic of stand-up to me, because it felt too formulaic. It felt not formulaic, but it was maybe the wrong word. It felt very like prepared. Like there were, at the end, there were like 18 callbacks, and then there were like references, and then every time they started a story, like they would basically have a story throughout the show, and then they just do a bit of stand up, basically like a club routine, and then go back into the story, and then go to a bit of stand up and back into the story. And I was watching, and I thought, like, this is really good, and it's very well structured, but it doesn't actually feel like it doesn't feel like somebody's just talking to me, and I can never get lost in the bits, because every time that happens, I get reminded, oh, I'm watching a show. And what I like about stand up is for it just to feel like somebody's just talking on stage. And, you know, and even though I know it's prepared, to still get the magic of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's why someone like Eddie Pepitone, I think it's how you pronounce Eddie Pepitone, he's really good, because he does this thing where he starts really quiet and then just starts screaming in the middle of a bit, and then he takes it quiet again, and you watch and you go, I forgot that he was quiet at the start of this bit, and now he's just tricked me again. And he does it again and again and again, and he just tricks you every time into thinking he's quiet, and then he screams, and then he gets quiet again.
He's like the Mogwai of comedy. There's quiet bits, loud bits.
Yeah. So I think he's really good. But I also feel like, oh,
that noise was a tennis ball bouncing off a bin.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So the dog can.
So yeah, I think I'm trying to go for something that's really fun. But if I can get a little part, or maybe like anything kind of smart in there that maybe proves a bit of a point. Mm. If anything, the point I think I'm trying to make is just a little bit to talk about the loneliness I feel at times, because I think that's very relatable to people. Mm-hmm. And then to talk about how I kind of want to just be happy. I think that's really it. And I don't want to be upset about, like, you know, my father leaving and then eventually dying when I was younger was really tough on me. But one of the things I've really started to realize recently is how much my mother was there. And I almost feel stupid writing a show or trying to write bits about how much I miss my dad or how much that didn't mean to me, because, like, I had my mom the whole time. And she's been literally there, like, dude. And, like, been under way more pressure than I could ever imagine. So I kind of, like...
So it's like a partly a homage.
Yeah, if anything, I'd say what I'd want the show to be, the hour, if I can get anything out of it emotional outside of the actual bits, is I want it to kind of be in memory of my father but dedicated to my mother in a
Mom's
way.
Moms are so great. I mean, dads are okay.
Well, I have no idea, unfortunately. So
okay, but moms are really great.
Yeah, I mean, moms, if only really my mother great. Died, then that would be a really great story, you know? Yeah. Then I could call Mommy's home, and that'd be really weird.
That could be the follow-up.
Yeah.
Just kill your mother.
And kill my mother.
You do that next year.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be perfect.
So I think, if anything, the tagline for the show, I say, it's about love, family, and pancakes.
Right.
Yeah, because it's a bit about, I think it's mainly about how, like, people, you know, I say the show's not about anything, and here I am talking about everything's about, I think it's about, like, kind of feeling a bit lonely, trying to figure out, like, what makes a person who they are, but then ultimately just being happy with yourself.
I think
if that's the message I can get across, that'd be great. But I'll probably just try to do bits that have those ideas in there rather than, you know, at the 50-minute mark go, and that's why my father leaving was so tough. And it feels just rehearsed and stuff.
Do you think with comedy there is that therapeutic element?
Yeah.
You know, the show we were talking about, I'm Dying Up Here, you kind of see this pain that a lot of comedians are in.
Like
when you see a lot of shows, it's like issues are being worked through.
Yeah.
Comedians are often depressives.
Yeah.
And there is that kind of therapeutic element, isn't 100%. There? There's the working through of stuff. But then I think there's also the aspect that audiences can relate to these stories that are being told, right?
Yeah.
Like you can see people come to your show, they might have had similar experiences.
Yeah, 100%.
those things are going to talk to them, right?
So I think it's therapeutic in two ways for me. First of all, I think the audience is one of the big parts of it, and that, again, in two ways. So one of it, it's really nice to hear an audience just come up to you and say, I've had a really shit week, and what you've done has really made me feel better, because I've had that happen a few times, and I've just gone, like, wow, that's incredible that, like, somebody said to me, I was having a horrible week, and you've made me feel better, and I'm going to...
It was ever the other way around. I was having a great week. I was having a great week.
Yeah,
so good to see you, Philip.
It's horrible. Jokes about your dead father depressed me. No, I've never had that. And then the other way, it's because of the relatableness, is you're talking about something that you maybe think is a weird concept or you feel alone about, and then they relate to that. And the other way I think it's therapeutic is in that it's basically taking, like, a lot of, like, I think my core bits and the ones that I think are the strongest, they come from a frustration, either at feeling like, how do you say, like, what do you call it when, like, you're not in the same, not in sync with the world? I can't think of the phrase for it.
Yeah.
At ends with the world? Is that something like that? Yeah, so you're in different position. It just feels like I'm missing something and I don't know why this is bothering me. So it comes from that kind of frustration. And to then say that opinion out loud and then people go, no, you're right. That is something that bothers me as well, or that is something I relate to. That's where it can feel incredibly, incredibly comforting. And to be able to take things that annoy you and then make, like, a product out of it, that feels incredibly satisfying. And I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and I was saying, like, essentially I was feeling, like, went on a few dates with somebody, and then they weren't interested in me, and it really upset me, but I got, I got over it in a week and a bit.
Did you get feedback about why?
They just said, I'm not feeling it anymore romantically, and I was like, yeah, cool, fair enough, and they're like, thanks for being so nice about it, and then I was, like, depressed for a week and a half, and I was like, I'm totally cool about it, right, but the thing was, I had that feeling, and then I sort of started thinking about, like, well, why was I not myself when I was on these dates? Why was I, like, why did I feel
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Intimidated by them. I started to explore this a little bit. And it all came from the fact that I felt like I don't have my life together.
Right.
And I felt like she... I mean, this may not be true at all, and it doesn't really matter because the jokes are written now. But I kind of sort of felt like she looked at me and didn't feel like I had my life together. And so now I've written a whole bit about how I think you should actually date guys who don't have their life together because it's way more fun and it's way more interesting. And one of the lines I have is something along the lines of... you know, it's easy to date a success who loves you. What about a failure that needs you? And so I'm trying to basically write, like, it came from that frustration, but it also kind of is this. And I was telling my friend, like, oh, it's, you know, I had these feelings, but now I've written this stuff out of it, and it feels so nice. And he's a comedian as well, and he said, yeah, man, it must be so horrible. Like, what do normal people do when they have these thoughts and these feelings and they get over stuff? What do they do with that knowledge? Because, like, they don't even get jokes at the end of it.
Things happen.
Yeah.
And then as a comedian, you can...
deal with it.
Right. It's like, here's a way to
and,
deal
and that's
with
the
it.
Thing I've always found is no matter what's happened in my life, even in comedy when I feel upset, as long as I'm writing, as long as I'm working on material, that'll... I always say this to... I'm not... Like, I've only been going about 5 years, but there's still comedians who are younger than me, both in age and experience. And I always say, like, the material will set you free. Like, that's the biggest thing that'll just ease you of your pain.
Yeah.
Because if you're feeling upset that no one's booking you, write material. If you feel upset that the gigs aren't going well, you can write... If things you're out of your control, but you can always control that you're working on stuff. It's so ambitious and hopeful comedy. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, it's like any creative undertaking, isn't it? There's so much that you're not able to control.
Yeah,
right. You're kind of waiting for these fairy godfathers or fairy godmothers to come along and anoint you.
Yeah, yeah.
Here is your chance to be on TV, or here is your contract to write a book or something.
Yeah,
and you're kind of waiting. For those, like, those gatekeepers, I guess, are less important now. Like, you can
especially
go
with
and,
online and
right,
stuff like
exactly.
That.
Like, you make videos and a lot of comedians and
put stuff online. Yeah,
exactly.
It's the best part of it.
Musicians as well.
I think that's why stand-up is so much better than acting, because acting you really are waiting for these gatekeepers if you want to reach the top levels. But as a stand-up, I mean, you could put your own clips online, you could put your shows online. Yeah. It's all there. It's super ambitious. And
I like your videos with Ali Woods.
Thank you. Yeah,
he's
the sketches.
Funny.
Yeah, he's very good. He's really clean at getting little jokes in there and just like cutting stuff down. Like, he'll just take a video that is be like 2 minutes long and he just goes, get rid of this, chop it down, and he'll clean it up. He's ginger, though, so that's the only...
You can't have everything.
Yeah, you can't have everything, man. No,
he's
no.
He's very... you recognise him instantly, don't you? I was at an Edinburgh show last year, and I was like, oh, that's Ali Woods.
That guy off the internet.
Right, exactly.
So it's good. Yeah, I love stand-up. Did you ever do stand-up or comedy?
Yeah, so I've written a lot.
Writer?
Yeah.
Should tell me more. I just mimed a pipe for any of the listeners coming in. A pipe in the graveyard, yes.
Well, this is what I like to do on a Sunday, a pipe in a graveyard.
I know what you're saying, buddy. Whoa, man, the graves are talking to me, bro.
But I've come to comedy performance later in life.
Yeah.
So I've started doing stand-up as I've got older.
Mm.
And a lot of that was through... Well, I was talking to Liz Guterbock about this. When I'd done... like books that weren't always funny, like more serious books, I would do book talks, and they would be like me trying to do a stand-up gig where I would do jokes and obviously no one would laugh because they're not there to laugh. Just a lot of very nice, like, I love my readers, very nice older people who are very serious, and I would do material that would not get laughs, and I was thinking, well, actually I should be doing this material to people who have come to a venue specifically to laugh at a comedy show.
Yeah.
And actually, when you do jokes and when you perform comedy, you get a kind of... It's hard to describe for people that don't know it, but it's a rush.
Oh my God,
that you could probably put on a level with... Not that I've ever taken drugs in my life.
Of course.
I'm sure none of us have.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You could possibly put it on a level where, you know, it's almost a similarity to a high that you get.
Yeah, yeah,
100%. From taking
like that. And it's also because of the especially, I don't know how far you've progressed within the stand-up world, but when you start to do more serious gigs and you do well, like that
well,
is...
I've never done well.
I knew we'd get along well. I knew we'd get along. No, when you do like so, like I've started like progressing like in the Comedy Store, and that's like, you know, that's a huge institution in the UK still, and you can't mess up because they'll happily, you know, downgrade your slot or give you a booking in a few months, so the pressure feels high.
Yeah,
and to do well at that gig or even like a bigger club, you know, when you start to get like 100, 200 plus people in a room, and you start to like do well, and you just feel that heat and that energy, and you just feel in control of it.
Hello.
Oh, I love the dog.
There's so many dogs coming to visit us.
When you feel that, like, it's just, oh, man, that is wicked.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's an incredible feeling because you get that instantaneous response that you don't get with...
And you feel so liked.
Right, exactly.
You feel like people actually like you for once.
Yeah, all
you spend the rest of your day
like
feeling like
such
a loser.
Days when you're a loser, they don't matter anymore. Yeah. You can forget about them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I said too much. But, yeah, that kind of instantaneous response, I think... has a real potency. When you write something, you never know if someone's going to have a reaction to it. Yeah. Or, you know, you do a radio show, a podcast or something, or even a TV show, you don't really know.
Yeah.
But when you're performing, like a musician or a comedian, you know.
Yeah, right?
If you mess up, you can tell.
Yeah.
But equally, if you do well, you can tell as well and get a response. Right?
And it's like, I'm sort of, obviously, I'm still relatively new act, like 4 or 5 years in, but, you know, I get moments where I think, like, I know it doesn't happen all the time, but I just think, oh, I did a really smart choice there. Mm-hmm. Or I really let that pause for a minute. I really, like, held that for the right moment, and I switched it, and then that feels good.
Yeah.
But stuff like that, when you have, like, when people say, when you crush, like, that's the American accent. Yo, dude, this guy crushed, bro. He crushed, man. But when you do, when you get that feeling, you know, that's, like, I've had a few of those so far, and it's like, wow. It's like, oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's exactly, and it's that response. You know, if you've written something good, people are laughing at it.
Yeah.
But then do you also have those moments where you think, well, actually, I'm really annoyed because this bit is very, very good and it's not getting the reception it deserves.
Of course. So I just tend to shout at the audience and call them all pedophiles. That's what I do. classic comedian move.
They must love that.
No, so I think it's, you know, with those ones you really feel it out, because sometimes I think also a lot of, like, especially when you start out, you think, why aren't they laughing and stuff like this, but a lot of times audiences, you know, they just want to chill, so you can do, like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of comedians have said this before, sometimes you'll do like a 20 minute set and it'll be like tepid laughter, and then you go off and then the audience goes, oh man, I really enjoyed that, and I said, and then you'd be like, oh, but you guys weren't really laughing a lot, and they get, yeah, we just been tired, so we just wanted to really enjoy, because that's how people are sometimes. I mean, obviously, but there are, like, I think it's, there's a difference between, you know, you don't want that, of course, you really want, like, proper laughter, but there's a difference between people not enjoying it and people not paying attention.
Yeah.
And
there's also different atmospheres as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a TV show or, you know, kind of comedy, maybe a comedy TV show where you have that warm-up guy.
Yeah.
And the warm-up guy whips the audience into a frenzy.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, if you're not laughing, you're going to have to come up here and tell jokes. And so whatever is said, the audience go into hysterics. You see that on a lot of American shows.
Yeah.
You can just walk out and be like, hi. The audience is
like, oh, yeah!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're just going to
I find
wild.
When I see, sometimes when I see clips that come from the US, like, of the audiences there, I think, damn, they really enjoy it. Like, but it's good because it's not like the comedy's bad either. It's like the comedy's great, but they're like laughing, they're really getting into it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you see like British audiences and you just think, you guys are such miserable twats sometimes. Not always. I love gigging here in the UK. It's really fun. But there are some times where you just think, oh man, like it just feels like there's a different energy. But it's, every room is different, every gig is different. So yeah, it's just really enjoyable.
Well, you've done a lot of gigs abroad as well.
Terrible locations
you're never gonna play at again?
No, I don't think any place has been that bad that has written me off like a nationality or culture. I gig a lot in Europe, which I really enjoy. Because I should have explained at the start, for anybody listening in, to explain my accent. So my mom is Slovenian American and then my dad was Austrian, and then I went to international school in Slovenia, so that's why.
Very Habsburg.
That's a funny way to phrase it. Minus the American, but that's funny, man. That's good. I like that.
You can have that one for free.
I'm not going to use it on a stage because everyone's going to be like, who the fuck Habsburgs? what? Habsburgs? But very, very much so. And oh man, look at this dog. It's like magical. You do see some dogs.
There's a lot of cute dogs here.
There was a dog I saw once, and I was with a friend, and I said, that doesn't even look like a people dog. And then they were like, what? And I'm like, you know, like, that doesn't look like a dog a human being would own. That looks like some sort of mythical creature.
Right.
But you see those dogs every once in a while, you just think, like, they're...
You have to send me a photo of that later, because I can't really...
I'll show you a photo of a dragon. There's just, like, there's some things in the world that are just so amazingly beautiful.
Were you saying about your family as well?
That my family is so beautiful. Yeah, that's my point. Anyway, I'll stop with that really sincere point about beauty and God. And talk about my family. I don't even remember what I was saying.
Yeah, we were talking about gigging around Europe.
So I grew up mainly in Europe, and so I like gigging there. It feels a bit more at home than... Yeah, it's great. Like, the English-speaking comedy scene in Europe is really exploding. There's tons of, like, expats, immigrants, and all sorts
like
of stuff.
Berlin.
Yeah. I think it was in Estonia. And also, there's a lot of places where you know everyone speaks English. Not everyone, but a lot of people speak English. And so you get like people who are going there to improve their English. Sometimes it's couples whose mutual language is English. Sometimes it's like Brits and Americans abroad. So it's just a and it's really fun because it's sort of it is the ultimate power of comedy, which is joining people together. In a community and they're all laughing at the same thing and that feels pretty incredible.
Do you do location specific jokes? Like were you writing some Tallinn jokes when you were in Estonia?
No, I do it every once in a while. So for Amsterdam I found it very easy to do that because I'd been there once before and also I think the Dutch are quite an easy audience to make fun of because they're inherently, I mean, they're former colonial power, there's this high status to it, they're also very weird people. If you're Dutch listening, I'm sorry to tell you.
You're like writing your Stroop Waffle gags.
So I had that one that I did, which was sirens. It's the comedy police. Too edgy. No, I hate that shit. Whenever I watch
that's
a comedian,
that's because of the
the one you might edit out.
The thing that's going to be edited out. People will be like, "What's that thing that they edited out?"
No, so I had one bit I did there, which was about like the type of men who go to the red light district.
Yeah.
And I basically just, there was a very physical joke bit where I acted out, like I basically, the second you walk into the red light district, the quality
of
men.
Are you about to tell me that you got your, what? You said it's a physical joke about the red light district. Did you get out a part of your body?
No. It's more that like, I don't know why, but you walk into the red light district and it's just the tourists who go there. Are just like, it's just, you know, some of them are like, you know, it's everyday normal people. Then you do get these men who just like, they just look uncomfortable to be around. And
it's
I'm not,
a very
it's,
weird
it's
place.
And so the whole bit was really making fun of them. And I sort of like do this whole act out where I like transform into like this non-human. I had a couple of other ones. One of them was like, it was a really stupid joke, but it was like, I went to a shop called Cheese and More. It's just more cheese. So much cheese. So stuff like that is fun. And then there's also in Amsterdam, they do this weird thing where, like, when you ask them to fill up your water bottle, they fill a glass of water for you. They have, like, these baths by the sink in a coffee shop will just be full of water constantly running. And that's how they wash it because they just sink it in there and they wash it. It's really weird. But so when you ask them to fill up their water bottle, they'll take the water bottle and they'll dunk it under the whole bath. And just so that the tap, I don't know if this makes clear. If this is making sense, basically the tap is right next to the water bath, and so they have to sink the whole bottle underneath, so the water can go in, and then they take it out, and so they hand you back this bottle that's drenched in water, and they look at you like that's normal, like they haven't just like baptized your water bottle and handed it back to you. So this location,
they do have some funny quirks there.
So stuff like that, I'll do those location specific jokes.
Fibo jokes.
Fibo.
Did you ever go there?
No.
It's like this takeaway where. There are these.
Is it like with the boxes and you open it up?
Exactly.
And stuff?
You put a euro in and get a cheese croquette out.
Very
strange.
That is strange. But I understand the practicality of that. That's the stuff like that. But I love it a lot. I think it's really fun. Also, it's kind of like free holiday. But it does. It is tiring at times, especially because I do like early flights usually to save money, and I have to like I work a 9-to-5 while I do all this as well. So it becomes like. It just becomes a lot. So that's the biggest thing I think I find really challenging about being a touring comedian who I've no agent, I've no like, you know, I've no manager or anything like that. It's all just me putting this all together. It's just a lot. That's why I'm really trying to make this. For me, this Edinburgh show is really my chance to hopefully prove myself in a way that I haven't before and hopefully get a bit of, you know, more industry stuff or maybe some just more gigs. It's like there's a lot riding on me for this to go well, but it's not everything. Because that's one of the benefits, I think, as well, and this is probably advice for any career path, which is that if you diversify your options, so like, you know, if the Edinburgh doesn't go well, I can still do club gigs. If they don't go well, I still have Europe. If yours doesn't go well, I still have Edinburgh. I always have other options there. Yeah. I'm a hustler, baby. I'm a grinder. And that's why I think women should take a chance on men who are failing, because we're hustle, we thrive, you know. One of the jokes I have in it is I say, you know, you're dating this guy, he's got a car and a steady income, I've got a bicycle and a dream, and I'm gonna ride that little thing to the top. So I'm very much in this stage of my career, but I'm still 25 and young, but it's fun to like, I'm just always like hustling, I'm always trying to like just get this going and get that going and take all the different routes.
I completely empathize with that, Philip.
I saw a fellow hustler. I could tell. Game recognized.
It was funny. We both arrived like on our bikes. Yeah. We just like, there's a kind of like shady glamour to that.
Yeah.
In itself.
Your bike was nice though.
Thank you. I've had it since I was 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
It's been with me a long time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow, it's, look at you.
Yeah,
so this book career is going well, isn't it?
It's lasted a long time. Well, no, I've never had an agent for anything either.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always been doing these things myself, and I sometimes think maybe I should be paying someone to do all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all the admin and everything.
100%.
But at the same time, I think I've got so used to doing it all now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like second nature.
Yeah.
And there are some people who can't book their own flights.
Yeah.
They're just incapable of it.
Yeah.
And they can't do, you know, accounts,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So, and I've kind of learned to deal with that
100%.
Shit.
100%. I think that's one of the biggest things. And I think I know this about comedy, and this is one of the advantages. Because I've never really had... I've had some, you know, people in the industry been interested in me, which is, you know, great when that's happened and it's been exciting. But because I've had to do a lot of this by myself, it kind of means that even when I am hopefully in a position where someone can help me out in some ways, that I will just have... I'll just be able to do a lot of it myself, that I'm not as dependent on it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that, like, you know, I don't know how it is with other creative spheres and other industries, but, you know, not being successful earlier on, or, like, compared to some of my peers who I started out with, for certain I'm not as successful in some ways, because it's just literally just means people take a chance on you, and just not the right people have, which is fine, but plenty of the right people have as well. So I've progressed in ways that they haven't, and they've progressed in ways I haven't. It's just that you learn to do it yourself. And that can be really satisfying. And that it means that when you finally do get the weight taken off of you, like a few of the, you know, if I just had like a few more people, like if I didn't have to invoice, if I didn't have to do this, I didn't have to do these just extra few things or follow up on emails.
Yeah, then chasing invoices.
And then you just free up that time, and then you realize, oh, I can do this. I can do so much more now with this time I have. Yeah. But if that doesn't happen, I'm still going to try. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you don't give up. You just got to keep going.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? Exactly. Any kind of creative endeavor, you do face a lot of hurdles.
Yeah.
You need to be strong and determined.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Grit.
Grit. You have to keep on going. I know a lot of people in acting, comedy, music, people who've found it tough and then have basically chosen not to continue that and become...
Given up was the word you're looking for. You liberal snowflake, too scared to say it.
I was thinking of
giving up.
I was thinking of my friends. I was like, I don't want to insult you, but like, it's fine.
No,
like,
no,
I understand
no.
it. Yeah,
also,
people,
sometimes
like,
external pressures happen.
Like become a teacher, or, you know, they become...
Or sometimes, like, their family gets in the way and stuff like that. Right, so you got to toxic people out of your life.
You
yeah.
just got to kill them.
Yeah, exactly.
And plus, you get an Edinburgh show out of it.
Exactly.
One final thing I wanted to ask you, Philip. I sometimes wonder about this idea of, like, the outsider's eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think maybe the funniest thing is if you're coming from a different place, right?
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about. Like, you can see the absurdity.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when I spent probably the first 20 years of my life almost every day in Britain, and Britain to me seemed normal.
Yeah.
And then I started traveling and realized it's a very, very strange place that's not like the rest of Europe or like anywhere else. And actually, having that outsider viewpoint maybe helps you to see the absurdity and to see the comedy and stuff, right? Do you think it's important to have that kind of...
I think it's sort of, I don't know, it can be an outsider eye, can be beneficial, but it can also be damaging, because there's a relatability that's required in comedy. And so somebody having the insider perspective, I think people who are able to be within this, I always find those people are really fascinating to me. People who can live in two worlds, I find those people really interesting to me. So I think of more, you know, I have like friends of mine who come from like a very like, you know, working class background, or like what we'd, you know, let's say that as an example. But now they work in like very like historic wealthy like industries. So let's say like, you know, people would understand that. And so I find them interesting in that they can interact in both of those worlds and appeal to both of that. And they can, I don't really know what my point was there. It was more that they can be within that world, but still have that outsider perspective. So they can relate to it, but because they're a little bit outside of it, they can poke fun at it through, it's almost through relating to it. Whereas I feel myself, because I was like, you know, my parents separated when I was young, so I was never really felt like I fell into the traditional family structure. And then I'm Austrian American Slovenian, so I'm not really from anywhere. I'm like technically a man, only in that I identify as a man, and I have male genitalia, or you know. But I've never super felt manly in this world. But I also don't feel like, you know, like a pushover. I don't feel like I feel like I'm sensitive and I let things feel me, which I don't think are traditional manly things. But I still like I still hate myself for it. So it's a really bizarre, it's a really bizarre dynamic there.
Well, I think that's true of most comedians.
Yeah. We all feel things and we hate ourselves for it. So I think an outsider perspective is really good, and you can cultivate that as well. You can sort of try to think about where do you feel lost in the world, or where do you feel out of place. I think it's 100% good, because you're just seeing something that no one else is seeing. Because, well, inherently every person, as long as you take the second to think, what am I actually doing in my life? What is actually happening around me? That'll pull you out of it. And just pulling yourself out of yourself is an outsider perspective. So it's hugely beneficial. I don't really know if that's the big, take home message I want to give, but I 100% think that I've always felt like a bit lost in this world. And it's kind of a sadness and a loneliness that is kind of like I've only started to address recently, how I felt it. But, I talked to my mother and she said, I've always felt that way about myself. And I talked to other people and I think that kind of a feeling, a lot of people feel lost because why should you feel kind of in place? It's so complex, the world we live in, that if you did feel in place, I'd judge you more. I think you're weird if you feel at home, given what's happening.
I think it's really cool to say what you just said as well. And I think it's great that these days people feel, and men feel like more able to express those things that maybe...
We need to talk about men's mental health. Yeah, I don't think anybody's talking.
No, but seriously, whenever I've been to a funeral, in my family from Yorkshire, no one cries. Everyone just talks about parking and stuff.
Oh, God, I love it.
It's ridiculous.
I love that.
It's good to express these things. So when you were just saying that to me, I was like, I wonder if a graveyard was the best place to bring you. But thank you for your candor anyway.
No, 100%.
We'll finish off now, Philip, but tell me what your next steps are. Obviously, Edinburgh, and then do you have any plans after that? Any
gigs? I do. So, get shredded for next summer, get ripped.
Love Island.
I think that's where my career is. Love Island 24, that's where the career is taking me. So I'm doing Edinburgh for the month of August, and then I'm going away to the States for the month of September. So I'm there for the month, and then when I come back in October, I'll be filming the show October 19th. West End Comedy Club is where it should be at, unless anything changes. And so that'll be filming the show, and then I'll use that, and then I'll release it like kind of on my website to buy, and then probably release it on YouTube a few months later, and then just have those as little clips to upload, and just sort of get a lot of this material out of the way. I'm a bit nervous about filming it, because it kind of like, it means that I can't do that material anymore, I can't develop it anymore, so I really have to make sure it's good by then. But I'm just incredibly excited for the show, to do it in Edinburgh, because I just think it's so fun. And I know that when people watch, I don't want to sound too arrogant, because I just fucking told you the US passport thing, but genuinely, the feedback I've gotten from the show, a lot of people find it like really refreshing and fun and interesting. It's not very serious, it's very silly, it's like very physical, but it's also like got a bit of heart and a bit of edge to it. So I think it's kind of everything I love about comedy I'm trying to put out on there.
Perfect.
Philip
Kostolewski, thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed today.
My pleasure. I'll shake your hand. Wonderful. Should I say where the show is at?
Yes.
The Edinburgh Fringe, Stand 2, 4 p.m.
Perfect. Cheers, Philip.
Thanks, Ed.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad. Make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcast from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk. And if you see me walking around in a park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming up next time on Park Date, I'm going to give you a lowdown on this restaurant that I'm in. I've never been anywhere like this in my life. Basically, I'm just eating cats. And who would have thought they could be so tasty? Oh, full story on the next Park Date. See ya.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.